Welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program addressing the ramifications of change and how today's choices will affect tomorrow's community. This program is an extension of and a production of Action for Healthy Communities and provided in collaboration with KCBX. It's made possible through underwriting by Joan Geller Sargent, and I am your host, Chris Kington Barker. It should be no surprise that the Central Coast community is one that is pretty sheltered and largely white. It's often why individuals and families have chosen to move here. And in our seemingly homogenous communities, it can be awkward and uncomfortable to confront matters of racial justice. While we've not recently had the lethal events that have been experienced in other areas of the country, we are not immune to institutional racism. RACE, which stands for Responsibility, Action, Compassion, Education, Matters, San Luis Obispo County, and other like-minded individuals have begun to advance a local dialogue around race to provide opportunity for marginalized groups to be heard and to educate as many people, both white and non-white, about a system that isn't working and what they can do to make it different. My guests today are Courtney Hale, Gina Whitaker, Julie Lynam, co-founders of Race Matters SLO County. This show is live, and we invite you to join our conversation with your comments and your questions, and you can do that by calling us at 805-781-3875. Again, that's 805-781-3875, and I want to welcome all three of you here today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
I think probably the first question is, kind of, how did this begin for you three? You co-founded this. What was the generation of that?
So we can trace this back to, it was in late June, there were some officer-involved shootings, one being Philando Castile in Minneapolis, and there was a Facebook Live video that a lot of people saw, and it was very disturbing. And then there was another shooting of a man named Alton Sterling, and they were very close together. And an African-American living here. I've been back for about 3 years. It's been hard for me when these things have happened, these incidences, and I've just felt angry and sad about it and not had a whole lot of folks to talk about it with in person or just to connect with. And so I was seeing protests in cities around our country and just feeling like, wow, there's nothing happening here in San Luis Obispo. And it's just frustrating. And I know there must be some other people who feel the way I do. And so at that time, I decided to organize a peaceful action in Mission Plaza. And I live actually near the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, and mm-hmm. they've had a Black Lives Matter sign, a banner, on their church. And so I knew they were probably good people to reach out to because I wanted people to stand with me and to also meet other people who were also just concerned about these incidences. So I emailed, I think I Facebooked the UU. I got in touch with Gina. We got in touch with some other people, and we had our peaceful action at Mission Plaza, and Gina got a lot of people's emails. Some people reached out to me after that through Facebook, who I think I was on the news and I was in the Tribune. So some people reached out to me, and those people said, hey, do you want to meet? And I met a couple of them. And then it got to the point where there were a lot of coffee dates with a lot of different people. And then I was talking to Gina too, and we said, why don't we all meet and just talk about what we want to do here? And so we met. It was about in August. We had no idea what we were doing, but we knew something had to be done and that there was a need that needed to be filled in our community. And we just kept on meeting and came up with our name eventually, and now we're here.
Gina, I'm going to go to you next, mm-hmm. because you've really been involved and an activist in this community for a long time.
I have. I'm the Social Justice Committee Chair at the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship for more years than I should be, really. And, our denomination, Unitarian Universalism, made some decisions back in 2015 at our General Assembly to support the Black Lives Matter movement. And that led to us mounting the banner after having many discerning conversations at the church. So we were very excited when Courtney reached out to us and know now that our banner was the right thing because it's brought people together and it's brought more than just our steering committee, which is actually about 12 people. It's going to bring about 80 people to a conference on Saturday, and I know that the people all over the county are crying for an opportunity to talk about race, to understand better what's going on, and we're going to try to provide that outlet.
And Julie, how about for you? How'd you get involved here?
Well, Gina and I am also a member of the UU congregation. And following discussions within our own congregation among the membership about what our support was going to be, we decided that it was time not only to hang the banner, but to reach out to the broader community in the form of educational workshops. And so Gina and I took this show on the road, and we began meeting with various organizations and church groups who wanted to hear this message. And so we've met with, I want to say, half a dozen organizations so far. And when we formed Race Matters Slo County, we decided, you know, what a great vehicle to bring the workshops to a greater audience. And so that's why we're going to have this workshop on Saturday. It's just an extension of what we've been doing within our own congregation.
Now, there was controversy around the banner. And yes. There were issues around the banner, correct?
Yes, there was. We had two banners stolen, vandalized, torn down. The third banner was installed professionally, is very high, and bolted to the building. And so far, no one has touched it. And we hope that it will hang for many years.
And how do you speak to those people? Because the issue was really that it's not just Black Lives Matter. All lives matter, right? Wasn't that one of the cries that was coming out with that, supposedly?
It's difficult for people sometimes to understand the Black Lives Matter movement. You know, we named our organization Race Matters Slo County because we didn't necessarily want to shy away from the goals of the Black Lives Matter movement, but we wanted to, broaden the concept of civil rights for everyone and fair treatment for everyone. Our saying Black Lives Matter definitely does not mean other lives do not matter. We are standing in solidarity with Black Lives Matter, but we are not anti-police. We don't condone violent acts in any way, shape, or form. We want to work with law enforcement to make sure that people in our county are treated fairly.
What is the end goal here for race? What are you looking to have happen when you formed this? Did you have a vision about what's at the end of this?
For sure. So we're looking to provide a space where like-minded people can find each other. Like I said, when there are these headlines, when there are these traumatic events, and you just don't know where to turn, and sometimes it's the social media, and that can spiral out of control sometimes, having people to meet in person and dialogue and heal with, and also to reach out to the larger community, and not just people who think exactly like us, but to have these workshops where we can provide space to talk about race, because it's it can be an uncomfortable topic, and I find in our community our community is very happy and comfortable, and people like to be that way.
Is it happy and comfortable, or is it sheltered?
Well, yeah, sheltered could be another word. We're in a bit of a bubble, and so it can be an uncomfortable topic. And so we're aiming to provide a safe space and a brave space for people to be able to talk about just what's going on in our country, because we're part of that. Even though we're in this sheltered community, we're still in this country. Some of us are from other places. We have family in other places. So it's important to think beyond the bubble and think globally as well.
So this, you go ahead.
Oh,
Julie.
I was just going to add that, you know, oftentimes people will say, well, why are we even talking about this? Mm-hmm. Our society has moved on beyond race. You know, even talking about it creates division. But I would argue that that's all the more reason why we need to continue this dialogue that we're having. And it doesn't mean that we don't value ourselves as one body, as one community, but it also means that we need to look at each other and celebrate one another's differences, and there's nothing wrong with that. And I just wanted to reference a viewpoint published August 22nd, 2015, Andy Peace and Reverend Rod Richards from our congregation, just to address that whole issue of Black Lives Matter and All Lives Matter. And it says, to say that Black Lives Matter doesn't mean that Black lives are more important than other lives or that all lives don't matter. The systemic devaluing of Black lives calls us to bear witness even as we acknowledge that oppression takes many intersecting forms. So, again, it's not saying that all lives don't matter. It just means that in our society, some Black and brown lives have been devalued.
Yes. Yeah, it's a good point, and thank you. And we have a call from Heidi Harmon here.
Oh, yay.
Yay. Heidi, are you there?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you for calling. Congratulations, by the way.
Oh, yes. Thank you so much. I'm really interested in how we can create more diversity here. This is something I talked about in my press conference, and I've already had HR people that specialize in hiring more diversity in communities contact me. And I'm just curious to hear from the group what thoughts they might have about how we can invite more of that and create more diversity here in the city.
Excellent question.
Yeah, absolutely. Hi, Heidi. This is Courtney.
Hi, Courtney.
So one of the goals of the group and one of the reasons we wanted to create it is so people who are moving here, families, people with young Black children, old Black children, multiracial children, families who come here have a home base. Not just, and we don't just talk about trauma in our group. We have goals to have play groups and family days and things like that, movie nights, and just sort of a hub for where people of color can feel welcome. And when we say feel safe, not just physically safe, although that's been a concern for many recently, but safe to express viewpoints, and that there's just a place to talk about things that come up and where they can find some folks of color and other marginalized groups, and to know that SLO County and the Central Coast is a community where they can find some folks to dialogue with or to.
We hope to engage young families in SLO County with a program geared toward race-conscious parenting. That's something that we're talking about, how we can do that, not only for parents of children of color, but for parents who want their white children to be equipped for a diverse society, which if we can create more diversity in our county, we can say this is a welcoming place to multiracial families of color or multiracial families.
And to the point about promoting businesses who want to diversify their workforces, I would argue that it gives them a strategic advantage to say that they promote diversity, and when they're looking to hire people, that they make part of their hiring practice. We've talked a lot about that in my class at Cal Poly. I teach a class on multicultural society and mass media, and we talk about diversification of media and newsrooms, and this is something that organizations across the spectrum should be thinking about as they hire. And the more people we have, the more comfortable people will feel moving here. That's one of the things that I hear so often. People don't want to move here because they don't see people like themselves reflected.
Well, so. In fact, you know, to that point, Julie, haven't we seen, even with the university, that there's been a move out or an exodus mm-hmm. of some of the instructors of color mm-hmm. because they, for whatever reasons, and maybe you can speak to that. You're probably more intimately knowledgeable.
Well, I just started at Cal Poly, so I can't really speak to the reasons why some of the faculty or staff have left, but my suspicion is that perhaps they didn't feel that they had the support that they needed to, you know, be their best selves or to advance within the, you know, larger institution. And so that's one reason why they may have felt they had to go elsewhere.
I think the statistic is 40%.
Courtney, you might speak to that.
Have left.
Right. I've heard that statistic. And since we're not we're a community group, but we have worked with Cal Poly. There was an incident of hate speech, and I went out to support the students there. So I think it's important to support the students and faculty of color, obviously, so they're not wanting to leave. And we can't speak to the specific inner workings or
sure
every reason they might have left. But as community members, and now that we're forming this group, we do see it as a way to hopefully retain the diversity that Cal Poly brings. So they know there's a group here in the community where they can come. There's people dialoguing about race and just simple things like knowing where to buy your hair products and little things like that.
Absolutely.
The mundane everyday life can be challenging even as a person of color. And so having people to relate with and knowing where to find them can be a start. And we hope that our group is able to retain diversity.
Heidi, did that answer your question?
Yeah, I mean, I think those are all sound like we're moving in the right direction, and anything I can do, I'll be there on Saturday, so anything I can do to support that, I'd be happy to.
Well, thanks for calling in.
Yeah.
Since Heidi brought up the workshop on Saturday, we would like to emphasize that, unfortunately, the workshop is full. We have about 80 people coming, and it's all we can handle for the type of workshop we want to do. We want to make it really worth people's time. So it did require prior registration through our Facebook page, and some people didn't realize that. So we can't take any more people this time, but we have an email where you can email us if you want to be put on an email list so that you can be informed of future events and future workshops. Do you want me to give that email
please
out?
Yes.
The email is race race dot
matters
matters dot slo@gmail.com.
Okay, great. You're listening to Central Coast Voices here on KCBX Public Radio Station. If you just joined us, we're discussing why race matters on the Central Coast, and my guests are the co-founders of Race Matters SLO County. RACE is an acronym for Responsibility, Action, Compassion, and Education. My guests are Courtney Hale, Gina Whitaker, and Julie Leinen. And your voice also matters. We are live and we're taking calls. We'd like to hear from you, your thoughts and comments on today's topic. To join our conversation, please call us at 781-3875. Again, that's 805-781-3875. You know, you mentioned, Courtney, the concept of the happiest place. Mm-hmm. And when I was looking around and doing some research for today's show, I saw a quote by a student that was written in a publication. It was a Cal Poly student that had said that nobody's talking about social justice. He said the happiest place in America is SLO because nobody's talking about social justice
here.
That's
why it's happy?
Yeah. And I thought that was an interesting, you know, that it's...
I can't
it's
tell like whether that's sarcastic or not. Or
no, that it was like it was out of the picture, that it was kind of like being insulated mm-hmm. from it was the whole concept of not having to deal with it. And that it just was conveniently something that could be closed behind doors. What do you think of that?
Well, I would say he's actually absolutely right in that it is convenient for a lot of people here. And it can be looked over, especially the specific issue that brought us together was the killing of unarmed black men. And that is something because... something to that extreme. Like you said, the fatal incidents haven't happened here, and it's something you see maybe people protesting on television far away. And because there are so few Black people here, it can be. It's very easy to, because it's uncomfortable and can be unpleasant to face. And there is a mentality sometimes of like, well, I don't want to be depressed or watch the news, or I don't want to deal with that. But it's so hard when people look like you and you're seeing them be devalued. It's really hard to turn that off and just, oh, well, I'm just not going to deal with it. It's almost like you have to confront it, and we don't really have a choice. And so it's another reason we came together and why the allies who work with us who are not African-American are folks who are choosing to confront these issues, either because it does affect people in their family or just because they've been drawn to the cause for other reasons. And so it is uncomfortable, and some people are happy not addressing it, but I just don't think that works. I think we have to address the wound of racism and just the legacy of racism in our country. We've tried being colorblind and not talking about it, and we believe that that doesn't work.
Now, with Race Matters, you know, you, Courtney and Julie, you're African American, Gina's white, and you know, are we talking about all races? Are we talking about Latinos? Are we talking, you know, is the focus on people who are from Muslim, you know, Muslims? Are we talking about individuals who come from other countries? From, you know, or is it focused on Black?
That's a really good question. So although we were brought together by the killing of unarmed Black men and inspired by the Black Lives Matter movement, when we say race matters, we mean matters of racial justice, and also that
simply, and religious justice.
Yeah, that talking about race matters, and that we come from an intersectional approach and stand with all people of color, marginalized groups,
LGBTQ, Muslim,
right.
The water protectors at Standing Rock.
Absolutely.
You know, we don't want to dilute our first workshop exactly with trying to encompass all of those marginalized groups, but in our hearts, that's what we're striving
for. So ultimately, that is the goal.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's the
yes.
focus. Mm-hmm.
I'm really concerned about our Muslim community. I know our community has come together
yeah.
To support the members of the mosque. We had over 300 people back when San Bernardino shootings happened. And I know we have a lot of interested people and good people in this community that want to understand Islam. So there have been many opportunities to do that. And it's definitely a top of my list on, you know, protection as far mm-hmm. as protecting
well,
marginalized groups here in our community.
Gina, through another organization, actually provided education about Islam, did you not?
Yeah, People of Faith for Justice mm-hmm. was part of providing that. And mm-hmm. and Dr. What's his name at Cal Poly, he held courses in
right.
Islam for the public free mm-hmm. of charge, mm-hmm. most recently through Lifelong Learners,
right.
Stephen Lloyd mm-hmm. Moffat. So,
I think when we talk about whether or not incidences happen here, one of the things that I was thinking about driving over to the station today, you probably recall last year, there was the burning of that complex in Santa Maria for the gentleman and his wife who were going to be building
for
the his farm workers.
Right.
And he was going to be providing housing for his farm workers.
Well, absolutely. I think we cannot forget that even though, you know, we do live in a bubble and many people feel isolated mm-hmm. from what's going on nationally, we do have issues here that need to be addressed. I would also remind people of the cross-burning incident that happened several years ago in Arroyo
mm-hmm.
Grande, and some incidents have happened in Cal Poly's campus and some others. So it's not like this is not affecting people here, because it is. Maybe not on a larger scale, So that's all the more reason why we need to. San Luis Obispo is a leader in so many areas. Mm-hmm. I think we can be a leader in this area as well of inclusion.
Interesting. Let's take a call from Amanda here. Amanda, are you there?
I am.
Hi, did you have a comment or question?
Yeah, I just wanted to say thank you so much. I recently moved back to the Central Coast. I grew up here in San Luis Obispo and have lived in far more diverse places in the last 10 years since I've been gone. And one of my fears of moving back to San Luis Obispo was coming to a city and a county where there is, just the percentages are so low in our diversity. And just the prospect of raising children in San Luis Obispo, particularly the city of San Luis Obispo, where the racial diversity is so low, and really diversity on all fronts is really low. So I just want to say thank you for really starting something in our community that is so much needed, and is really, I'm hoping, going to make our little corner of the world a better place.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for your
support. Just be sure to follow us on our Facebook page, Race Matters Slo County, and our email, again, race.matters.slo@gmail.com. And let us know, send us an email and tell us more about yourself, and we'll definitely keep you posted on what's coming up.
Wonderful.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Amanda.
Thank you.
I wanted to say something. What was it? I wanted to stress that we are interested in, I know our listening audience is far beyond San Luis Obispo, so we were asked to kind of come up with some ideas about where people could go to find out more information about these kinds of things that we're trying to do in other parts of the county or in Santa Barbara County. So the NAACP does have a Santa Maria Lompoc chapter, mm-hmm. and they're easily found on Facebook or on the internet. And I believe someone in town is trying to start a San Luis Obispo chapter. I haven't gotten
for
details.
For the NAACP.
Yes, for the NAACP. So if that person is out there listening, contact us. We want to know who you are. Also in the Monterey or Santa Cruz area, you could contact the local Unitarian Universalist churches. We have one both in Santa Cruz and in Monterey for up-to-date information on similar work being done around these issues in their areas. And then down in Santa Maria, if you're interested in work around immigration and the welfare of field workers, CAUSE is another organization, CAUSE, that you could contact about that.
Great. You are listening to KCBX, your public radio station, at 90.1 FM San Luis Obispo, 91.7 FM Salinas to Paso Robles, 89.5 FM Santa Barbara, and streaming at kcbx.org. Race Matters, Slo County, has its first event, A Conversation About Race in America, scheduled for December 3rd. Sign up for that event, however, is full with a waiting list. That's a great indication that people are concerned about divisiveness in our society and seeking ways to become involved. My guests today are co-founders of Race Matters Slo County. RACE is an abbreviation for Responsibility, Action, Compassion, and Education. And my guests with me today are Courtney Hale, Gina Whitaker, and Julie Lynham. This show is live, and you can bring your comments and questions into our discussions by calling us simply at 781-3875. Again, 805-781-3875. You mentioned, Courtney, that you came back into town a couple of years ago. My question for the two of you, for Julie and Courtney, is how comfortable are individuals who are white in this community holding conversations with you about issues of concern and that matter for you? You work in the community.
Yeah.
You're here in the community. I mentioned at the beginning of the show, it's an awkward conversation, uncomfortable. People don't like to think of themselves as being ill-informed, possibly being viewed as racist. What do you think about that? I mean, how is that for you?
It's, I have to say, like in my everyday life, folks aren't too eager to talk about race and racism. I think mm-hmm. there is a big fear that folks will say is something offensive. And so there's a hesitancy there. And sometimes it helps to have a structured group with structured questions kind of guiding you. And that's part of what we're going to have at our first conversation about race this weekend. But in everyday life, it can be really awkward. And I would just encourage anyone out there to try to make the first step and definitely like educate yourself. There's resources out there. Showing Up for Racial Justice is a group. It's actually a white led group, racial justice group. I know they have a lot of resources, and there is stuff out there that you can educate yourself with. And if you have a thoughtful question and you're coming from a good place and you already know someone, it probably helps to have a relationship at first, or at least know someone
sure.
before you bring up awkward racial issues. But there's definitely – it can be hard, but I encourage anyone who's curious or who wants to ask questions to educate themselves. Mm-hmm. And if they want to know how we're feeling –
You know, I think the word curious is really an interesting one, because there is, it seems to me, my own humble opinion here, that we've lost the curiosity about other people. We slip to a place of thinking we know or pretending we know. And curiosity is about a willingness to ask questions. It's what kids do. It's how they learn, you know. And there's this really, it's okay to not know. And to come from a place of simple curiosity. And I don't know that we really hold those conversations.
Yeah.
Either because we feel stupid or because we're embarrassed or I don't know.
I think it's a lot of it is not being afraid to take a risk.
Mm-hmm.
And so many of us today are risk averse because we're afraid that we're going to offend someone. I mean, quite frankly, many people might think that by the very nature of them bringing up racial issues, they might be branded as a racist.
Right.
Who wants, you know, to feel that burden. So I think that Courtney's absolutely right. I think it's going to take many of us stepping outside of our comfort zones and just taking that baby step toward, hey, you know, this is a person of color in my community. Let me go up to them and start a conversation. Take people out for coffee that you wouldn't normally take out for coffee, or have lunch with a colleague that you've been curious about. And you never know what, you know, dialogue might open up in the conversations, but it just takes that one step of getting outside of yourself and, you know, bridging that gap. And more to Amanda, when she was talking about raising children here, absolutely, it starts early. The earlier we start having these conversations with our children, the better off we'll be in the long run.
Yeah.
An interesting place to educate yourself is a new book by a very popular author named Jodi Picoult called Small Great Things. And she's written a book about white supremacy and racism and how that operates or can operate in the society. And one of the things that she says in her author's note that really came home to me is if you're white, like I am, and like she is, you can't get rid of the privilege that we have, but you can use it for good. Don't say, I don't even notice race. It's like it's a positive thing. Instead, recognize that differences between people make it harder for some to cross a finish line and create fair paths to success for everyone that accommodate those differences. Educate yourself. If you think someone's voice is being ignored, tell others to listen. If your friend makes a racist joke, call him out on it instead of just going along with it. And she goes on, it's a really great novel. It's a quick read, page turner. You won't want to put it down, and you might learn a lot about racism in our society right now.
Well, and when I mentioned the incident that took place in Santa Maria with the burning of the homes, the thing that really stood out to me, if I looked at letters to the editor and information, was the silence.
Yeah.
Overall, the silence.
There was a lot of
that people weren't horrified.
Well, I want to say that it isn't just the past. Just this last 2 weeks, 4 anti-Semitic incidents have occurred in our local junior high and high schools. And Rabbi Linda Burtenthal at Congregation Beth David is speaking out. She's writing a letter to all of the superintendents and principals of this county, and these were members of her congregation. So it's happening here, folks. It's serious. People are being marginalized in big ways that are painful to them. So I encourage you to look into those issues.
Do you think that there is that is a local display of people feeling emboldened in the nation?
Absolutely.
With what's happening with the changes in government?
Absolutely, because on at least one of those incidents, our president-elect's name was thrown about as part of the attack on the young girl.
So what do we do about that? I mean, so I was looking at your Facebook, which, by the way, you've got some great information on it. You've got some videos. You've got information from national, local. So what do we as individuals who can't get into the seminar, into the workshop, what do people begin to do?
We just need to support one another, as Gina said.
And how do we do that, Julie?
If we see someone who's being marginalized or targeted, we speak up and step in and say, this is not okay. Mm-hmm. I often wear a safety pin as a symbol of, you know, I'm someone that you can feel supported by post-election. I know a lot of people were feeling like very anxious and afraid. One person we know was even feeling like, should I even go outside? Because who knows, you know, what racial epithets might be thrown my way. So it's just a small gesture, but it's one that has meaning, and there are many ways that we can do things like that just to show that we stand in solidarity with those who are feeling less safe.
I got an email from Courage Campaign the other day, and the term they're using is courageous resistance. So I'm adopting that as it's an echo in my head right now. What are ways that we can be courageously resistant to what's happening? To folks who have a lot less privilege than I do. So, you know, write that letter to the editor. Call that person that, you know, in your office who you never talk to and say, wow, you know, a lot of things are happening. Maybe we could go out and talk about them. Try to be brave. Try to be courageous. Courageously resist.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be somebody you know. Right.
No,
it doesn't have to be
not.
A friend or a colleague if you see that something just simply is wrong.
So on Facebook right now, there's a video of how you can help if someone is being marginalized or attacked.
Right.
And what they're suggesting is not to confront the attacker, but to sit down next to the person, say it's outside, or stand next to the person and start a conversation with that person and start talking about something completely different. And then say, well, why don't we go to coffee and talk some more and just leave? So that's one way. I think we have a call.
Yeah, you don't want to set it up so
escalate.
That it's confrontational.
Right. Yeah.
Rochelle, are you there?
I am. Hi.
Hi. Did you have a question or comment?
Hi. I am familiar with this group as I'm one of the steering committee members. I wanted to say hello to the ladies today.
Hello.
Hi, Rochelle.
She's a founding member.
I think the part of this conversation that we're having right now about how to talk about race in our local community and how to address issues that arise, racial incidences that come up, or racially charged incidences that come up. And I think one really important aspect to touch on is how, or asking the question, how are our institutions handling these issues? Because our institutions are made up of the individuals in our community that have the authority and that have the power to address these issues on a level that we as individuals may not necessarily have the ability to do. And I think it's encouraging people in those positions and asking people in those positions to really hold others accountable when these kinds of situations come up. So this incident that Gina mentioned about the young girl who maybe was the target of anti-Semitism, you know, what are the school boards doing about this? What are the principals doing about this? What are the teachers doing about this? What are the police doing when hate crimes arise? What are the, basically the actions that are taken to say to the community that this is not acceptable? And I think when we start asking those questions and asking our institutional holders to hold people accountable, then we can really see some differences made and really see some changes made.
And a key to what race is about sounds like it's education. It's not only conversation, but education. Mm-hmm. In that conversation, you're learning new information or kind of getting rid of misinformation.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I want to highlight, thank you, Rochelle, for bringing that up. Racism is institutionalized. It's in our DNA ever since the beginning. Ever since the beginning. So, again, like Rochelle said, we can't solve it one person to one person, but we also don't want to overlook that. But one of the things I'm really excited about is the new police chief in San Luis Obispo City, Deanna Cantrell. She is really becoming forward-thinking about how to educate the community on policing issues. And I know she's thinking about having some exploratory meetings with key groups in the city and thinking about how we can offer some kind of, she can offer some kind of public education on policing. And what is that about? I don't know anything about policing. I would have no clue how to deal with issues from littlest to the biggest. But I know she does. And so, you know, thumbs up to our police chief here for reaching out. Looking forward to finding out more about that.
How do we begin to reach out? Because it seems like initially the first individuals that step forward for any kind of workshops or any kind of trainings are usually the people that would be most interested, most open, most aware, and most alarmed. Correct? I mean, that's my experience.
We get accused of preaching to the choir all the time.
That's my experience. So how to reach out to those that seem unreachable but probably are not?
You know, we're hoping we do have a multiracial and multigenerational group. Our steering committee, mm-hmm. and we are calling on some of the white allies in the group to perhaps develop, or we'd help them too, but develop an education program or even just a dialogue for white folks who maybe might not necessarily show up to the event with the Black Lives Matter flyer, but maybe they want to talk about things and they're afraid to offend. So maybe if they have folks who look like them, maybe it will be more comfortable. And we do have a goal of reaching out. And you're right, we might start with folks who are already on our side. I know people are choosing sides.
Or at least open to the dialogue.
Yeah.
More aware.
Yeah. So we're hoping as we have more and more events that will reach more people and that people will come who don't necessarily come to these events all the time.
And we need to equip those of us who are in the choir on how to bridge the gaps.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I mean, I stand in line at the grocery store. We all do. And I don't know any of those people around me. But so many times I want to say, what do you think of this that just happened? And I'm a little afraid, believe it or not. I can be intimidated too. I'm a little afraid to do that because who knows what it will start, you know, with a perfect stranger. I've fantasized walking in my neighborhood. I know only my neighbors in the first four or five houses around me. And just, you know, on some issue and just saying, you know, this is happening. What do you think about it? Maybe we should get together as a community group in our neighborhood for coffee and talk about it. I'm a little intimidated to do that, but I'm hoping to get over that because I think that's the only way we're going to make progress.
And I might be getting a little ahead of myself here, and this sounds really ambitious, but one of the things that I'd like to do with this group, and maybe you ladies can back me up on this, is in the future to bring these types of educational workshops to the school board, to the schools, to the county board of supervisors, to the city councils and the police departments and sheriff's office, and really dig deeper to see what we can do as a community to lift all of us up, because nobody can do this alone. It has to be a team approach.
The, you know, the question that Heidi Harmon brought up when she first called in is, how do we make the community more racially diverse? And we have a Cal Poly that is one of the whitest campuses in the state.
It's actually education. The highest white population in all the California state university system.
You know, and frequently communities reflect the campuses that they're around, especially if they're cities that are built around community campuses. That's a big uphill climb, you know. And so do you have thoughts about that? With your students, when you're working with your students, what are you teaching, Julie?
Oh, I teach multicultural society and mass media, and we talk about this a lot. we talk about diversity and inclusion, and a lot of the students would like to see a more racially and culturally diverse student body, and they do acknowledge that it is very white, and it's something that, you know, they would like to see change, but they, as individual students, can't do anything about that. It has to come from the system. The California State University system has to decide that it wants to make a good faith effort of outreach and perhaps, dare I say, marketing to, you know, schools that have diverse populations to say, look, you know, we're looking for to diversify a student body at Cal Poly. Give us a look. You know,
and you have to play devil's advocate, too, on the other side. I think there is a population of individuals that would like to keep it the way it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's an issue.
No doubt.
The Cal Poly thing is, I mean, there have been many an article. There's I think, staff and faculty dedicated just to that. And it's definitely, it's been a hot issue for a while.
Yeah.
But like you said, it's been an uphill battle. It's been difficult. Mm-hmm. The recent free speech wall that had some hate speech on it probably
doesn't
help.
But that's an interesting issue, too, because is it free speech or not free speech?
Right.
And, you know, and when you say it's free speech, is it free speech that you like or don't like? And it's, you know, I mean, it's a real issue.
It's free speech, but it's speech that's painful and hateful, and there needs to be support in place for those people who feel like they don't have it.
So is really the goal in the teaching is really how to respond in a way that is not angry and hateful. Because that seems that it just builds and builds.
It can be.
And it's ugliness against ugliness.
There is a bit of a cycle of, again, when, especially with social media, kind of compounds that, and just our culture right now, where we're kind of called the politically correct crowd or people who are oversensitive, although many of the issues we respond to are very serious and life or death.
Sure.
But there's sort of these sides, and one of the C in race is compassion. And one of our approaches that we're, you know, looking towards is finding the compassion in this work, and that is how to reach the people who might not already be wearing the Black Lives Matter t-shirts and whatnot, but folks who have questions about that movement and aren't so sure about it, and providing space for them to really ask those questions, and about everything that we talk about post-Trump America and everything, what's going on. The compassion piece, I think, is important for everyone who's doing this work, and as we continue to try to reach more people.
And you mentioned, too, in the information that you gave me, Gina, that this is inclusive of white lives.
Right.
You know, and that can't be overlooked. That can't be understated either, that it needs to be inclusive.
Yeah. You know, Martin Luther King said, hate can never drive out hate. And darkness can never drive out darkness. Only light can do that, and only love can drive out hate. So, to respond hate with hate, it's a short term response with no long term benefits.
And we have a call from Yolanda. Are you there, Yolanda?
Yes, I am.
Hi. Did you have a comment?
I do. I regarding the education part of your. Of your organization. I guess about 8 or 9 months ago, I came across the books by John Lewis called March. They're graphic novels, and they're the story of the, it's March 1, book 1, book 2, and book 3, and they're the story of the struggle in the South to get voting rights. And when I gave this to my daughter, she read it and she said, I never learned anything about this in high school.
Oh, God.
And I don't know how the libraries in the high schools and junior highs are now, but I think it would be a good thing to take them and donate them if you can find the funds. I'm going to take a set to Los Osos Middle School.
Nice.
So they're there.
Good
so
for you.
Kids can read them.
That's awesome. I mean, I could see us doing a small fundraising campaign, you know, what do you call it, a fund GoFundMe campaign just for that purpose. I hope that Los Osos Middle School takes this to heart and does put it in their library. And great that you recognize that. John Lewis received Nobel Prize in Literature. No, wait, I'm wrong. No, he received a big prize for part three. I forget which one it was.
Well, thanks.
Yeah, that's an amazing set.
That's a really great. Good idea, actually. And I think even with Rochelle's point, too, and in approaching institutions, that's like a really a simple but really powerful positive gesture in terms of getting more stories of color and important parts of our history into the schools.
Yes. Thank you, Yolanda.
You're welcome. And I hope that this effort grows and increases and helps
thank
people
you.
in our community to feel more comfortable.
Great.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
And Julie, did you have a comment?
Yes. I work with youth grades 3 through 6, and I'm a white woman, so when issues of gender come up, I'm very comfortable addressing those, but I'm really not so comfortable with racial things that may come up, questions even. And I'm wondering, for people who work with younger kids and have younger kids, do you have suggestions for us?
Good question.
I would just say for my own children, I have a 9-year-old son and a 6-year-old daughter, that it's just making sure that in your own home you're doing the education piece, because I know that a lot of students aren't getting the history in their schools. And so I take it upon myself at home to read stories about the civil rights movement. And, you know, I want them to understand their history and understand what it means to be children of color in this multiracial society, but still living in a, you know, predominantly white community. So honestly, I think it starts at home. And yes, we do need to put the pressure on our school systems to be more inclusionary and to, you know, introduce some of the books that our previous caller mentioned into the curriculum.
That's a great idea. And I think that we as parents can educate ourselves along with educating our children as well.
Absolutely. And one other thing, and Julie, I thank you for calling and speaking your truth that it can be difficult to talk about race, especially with your kids. One thing, and this is just, you know, my personal feeling, and I brought it up earlier, is that there's been this notion to not talk about race, mm-hmm. and that if you do, if you spot that difference and if you name it, you're being racist somehow, which is really, I think, kind of absurd, because it's obvious that we have difference, and little kids.
And we notice color.
Yeah. Little kids see that. So they'll speak up about it sometimes. Right. And so I think instead of, oh, no, like we're all the same, that hasn't gotten us to where we want to be. And so we are different, and we can see that difference, and we can name it, and we can also celebrate it.
Thank you, Julie. Thank you. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
And we have just a couple of minutes, so I wanted to see if you could wrap up, if you had any final words that you wanted to make sure that you get out.
Well, I do want to make sure people know how to contact us.
Okay.
So I'll repeat. We have a Facebook page. It's public. You can make comments and ask us for information. We have a lot of things on there now under Race Matters Slo County. And we have an email, and that email is race.matters.slo@gmail.com. And that we hope to meet you someday and help you out with our activities. But this Saturday, I'm sorry, there's a maximum amount of people coming to the workshop, so please do not just show up.
And
thank
a lot
you.
More to come.
And
correct?
A lot more to come.
Yes. And Julie.
Yeah, I would just, this is one of my favorite quotes from King also, but he said that our lives begin to end the day that we stay silent about the things that matter. Mm-hmm. And so I think now is a really interesting time. That's an understatement in our nation's history. And I think that remaining silent is not an option. And so we need to do a better job of talking across our differences and supporting one another. And so this is just one step that we are taking to do that.
Thank you.
And sure. I echo both those statements. Anybody out there, any groups that we don't know about who may have been doing this work, please contact us at the aforementioned email and our Facebook page if you have ideas. We have lots of plans, lots of goals, and we definitely want to just reach as many people as possible.
I really want to thank my guests for today's show, Courtney Hale, Gina Whitaker, and Julie Lynham, co-founders of Race Matters in Slo County. For more information about Race Matters, you can go to their Facebook page, Race Matters Slo County. Next week, join host Fred Monroe as he speaks with members of Slolio, a monthly storytelling event in San Luis Obispo. He'll be joined by founder Kirk Henning, former performer and playwright Gene Motler, and Michael Kaplan, a local playwright. They will talk about how Slolio works to bring people together to share and listen to stories that will entertain and promote deeper connections and understandings to self and community. Central Coast Voices is sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities and the San Luis Obispo Community Foundation in collaboration with KCBX and made possible through underwriting by Joan Geller Sargent. I'm Chris Kington Barker, and thank you for joining us on Central Coast Voices.
Thank you.